I titled this morning's service and sermon, The Prophetic Call of Disabled Bodies. And this is the blurb that appears in the August newsletter. You can pick one up on the table in the front lobby if you like. Ableism is the centering of temporarily able-bodied people while simultaneously devaluing those with disabilities. A recent report from the UU Ministers Association presents findings on how to create more accessible environments in which all can learn from and affirm the experiences of those with disabilities. Is our lived theology consistent with treating those with disabilities as people with inherent worth, dignity, and essential life perspectives for us all? The ableism report suggests adopting an approach of communicate, invite, and adapt when moving toward adjustments to ensure baseline accommodations for people with disabilities at any given event. Communication is key so that everyone is aware of the rationale for any changes being made to how we usually do things. But at the center is invitation, to solicit suggestions from participants, to center the voices of people with disabilities, and to listen to them, really hear their words, and move to adapt so that the gathered body of people is one inclusive and valuing of all bodies, of all abilities. So this morning, I, with a body temporarily abled in most ways, have a reading for you, a spoken word poem from disability advocate and educator, author and poet, Maria R. Palacios, abridged from her website, Crip Story. This poem will be an important portion of my words to you in the sermon, so that the voice of a person with disabilities can speak to all of us this morning, to empower and to educate. Naming ableism. Ableism is when you say that I don't act disabled and expect me to take that as a compliment. Ableism is when you assume that I'm automatically strong and courageous simply because I'm disabled. Ableism is when my blindness becomes your darkness, when you wear my scars on your sleeve and pretend to understand my truths. Ableism is when you try to heal me and fix me and promise me that I will walk or see or hear or that I will be everything I was really meant to be one day in heaven. Ableism is believing that heaven is an able-bodied place where broken bodies finally become whole. Ableism is when whole is a word reserved for the able-bodied. Or when you say that I'm beautiful despite my differences and fail to recognize that I am beautiful because of them. Ableism is how free you feel to assume. When you assume I'm single, when you assume I'm inexperienced in lovemaking, when you assume I hate my body because in your narrow mind, how could I not? When you assume sexy is not a word that applies to me. Ableism is when you tell me how inspiring it is to watch me work or watch me cook. Ableism is when your discomfort becomes a bigger barrier than a flight of stairs. Ableism is when parents yank their kids away and tell them not to stare, automatically teaching them that disability is a dirty word. Ableism is when disabled parents are told they should not be parents. When you feel that your baby is not safe with me, or when you pat me on the head as if I were a kid and call me cute. Ableism is nodding your head in understanding instead of admitting that you don't have a clue what I said. Ableism is making heroes out of people who take disabled kids to the prom and never talk to them again because that one good deed is good for at least 10 years, if not a lifetime. Ableism is a lifetime of isolation, a lifetime of segregation, a lifetime of untold stories of once upon a time there was a cripple who could. And for every cripple who could, there was and is an able-bodied person who should, but doesn't. Ableism is making buses accessible, but not the streets leading up to the bus stop, when not even the back of the bus was available to us in the unwritten pages of our history, and how we have had to become our own Crip version of Rosa Parks every single day to this day. Ableism is when you say that if God hasn't healed me, it is only because I don't have enough faith. How your faith considers me a punishment for God, or how you try to pray my differences away as if they were demons. Ableism is the demons of your ignorance. Ableism is when words like affordable and accessible are too good to be true. Ableism is saying there are no qualified disabled applicants, when what you mean to say is disabled people who can pass as non-disabled are hard to find. Ableism is when you use my hearing child to interpret for you. And ableism is when I find myself forced to use my hearing child to interpret for me. Ableism is asking my friends what I would like to order because you fear not being able to communicate with me. Ableism is the fact that you don't even try. Ableism is when your disabled child is the only one that didn't get invited to the party. Ableism is when a political party treats disability as a mockery of our struggles. Ableism is when cops see my disability as a threat. Ableism is when it's dangerous just to be out while crippled. Ableism is calling my needs special and then ignoring them. Ableism is believing I need to be fixed when you refuse to fix what's really broken. Ableism is you feeling I should be grateful for the ramps and the parking spaces as if access was not a basic right. Ableism is when my basic rights are considered a burden. Ableism is when you force unsolicited help upon me because to you it seemed like I needed it. Ableism is thinking that my asking for help gives you the right to decide for me. Ableism is when you wish for a world without disabled people and you say that to me and expect me to agree with you. Ableism is when you say that if you became disabled, you would want to die. Ableism is wishing you could help us die or wishing you didn't have to help us live. Ableism is when you turn your head the other way and say that your able-bodied privilege is not privilege, and refuse to see that your privilege is the face of my oppression. It is the hope of the report on ableism from the UU Ministers Association that hearing from the voices of persons with disabilities, a category that disproportionately includes retired and older people, might spark a few light bulb moments on the part of the non-disabled rest of us as we realize the privileges that come with a temporarily so-called able body. The so-called is important, for what is considered a disability changes over time and from culture to culture. Most no longer consider left-handed people to have a disability, for instance, although the left-handed among us could certainly tell us eye-opening stories of what it is like to live in a world set up for the non-left-handed. Wearing glasses is another example of something not thought of as a disability, although remove everyone's glasses and see how that goes. What are called disabilities is fluid over time and across cultures. Variations in how our minds and bodies work, our individual uniquenesses, people decide whether to consider them normal or typical or aberrant. Yet disabilities are part of the vast picture of human diversity. Not one isolated and completely other piece that doesn't seem to fit into the larger puzzle. Many disabilities are invisible. Perhaps physical, mental, or neurological conditions that may limit a person's sense or activities or movements. And because invisible can lead to misunderstandings, false perceptions, and judgments. But disabilities that may not be immediately visible become more apparent when we take the time to build relationships with one another, leading to practices of inclusion. The report from the task force does speak quite a bit to accessibility planning, ways that accommodations, building codes, communications, and shared materials can allow for ready use on the part of the largest number of people in our communities. And the kinds of questions recommended to ask ourselves do provoke congregational self-assessment. Questions like, are there cutouts in seating rows so that people with wheelchairs, service dogs, scooters, and/or walkers can sit with their friends and not be left jutting out into the aisle? Is the pulpit accessible? Is the chalice accessible? Do we use unscented candles? Do we ask that attendees refrain from wearing perfumes and scented oils? Are door, stall, and sink faucet handles, soap, paper towel, and other dispensers, and hand dryers within reach and usable with one closed fist so as to allow a person access who has limited use of their hands? Do we remember an accommodation request made by an attendee so that the person doesn't have to make the same request for every event they attend? Do we encourage persons with disabilities to share their gifts and skills through the various ministries of our congregations? Search for meaning speakers, greeters, ushers, choir members, soloists, musicians, committee participants. And do we support their involvement in them? Are we knowledgeable about the disproportionate impact of broad social justice issues on people with disabilities? Poverty, unemployment, incarceration, voter suppression, reproductive justice. And the way that single pop-up justice initiatives, such as the Stop Sucking Plastic Straw trend, can negatively affect disabled persons' access to needed daily activities? Do we include people with disabilities when listing marginalized communities in our anti-oppression training and programming, as vital viewpoints in addressing issues like environmental policy, gun control, school discipline, and the securing of consent? I want to be clear, I'm asking myself all of these questions. I have taken these opportunities to speak to you as opportunities from my own self to learn and to grow. So please don't hear this as me sort of speaking at you. And then the report asked that a language alert be issued so that we not only avoid ableist phrases like that's crazy or lame or retarded or demented or loony, but also expressions like confined to a wheelchair, is homebound, or is a shut-in, as well as stricken with, suffers from, is the victim of, or is a vegetable. In our wording, we are asked to engage in a people-first policy that moves from referring to someone as paraplegic, psychotic, schizophrenic, or spastic, to describing a person who has paraplegia, an individual experiencing psychosis, someone diagnosed with schizophrenia, or someone having spastic cerebral palsy. And more difficult, perhaps, to remain attuned to, we are asked to take up a new metaphor challenge so that compelling alternatives to body-based imagery privileging abled bodies can be employed in our prayers, meditations, hymn lyrics, sermons, newsletter articles. UU Minister Suzanne Fast writes, "In Unitarian Universalist worship, we march for justice and stand for causes all the time. We also see clearly, raise our voices, and hear the truth. We bless the hands that reach out and the feet that follow the ways of righteousness. If we like something, chances are good there will be an able body attached to it. Disabled bodies and minds are reserved from things we don't like or don't want to be. These images both rely on and perpetuate the abled privilege our society is founded on, and that privilege is what makes the dehumanization of disabled people possible and puts both rights and lives in peril. And like all forms of privilege, it diminishes the humanity of those who hold the privilege, not only those who do not. It is the job of religious community to resist this, because we are in the business of unmasking privilege. The relentless use of embodied imagery leaves many people with disabilities feeling included. When even worship is not a refuge from society's endless negative messages, it is a big deal. More often than not, we might hear, it's just a metaphor. Get over it. Or, are people so thin-skinned? Itself an ableist metaphor. Well, if it's just a metaphor, then let's find a different one. Many of you are aware that the UUA's most visible public advocacy campaign, Standing on the Side of Love, has responded to the concerns of disability rights organization and reimagined itself, changing its name, logo, and branding to Side with Love. The shift is more than linguistic, for it involves reimagining the mission of the organization, its underlying theology, and its way of doing things. Side with Love raises provocative spiritual questions, including, when have I sided with love? When have I sidestepped siding with love? When have I chosen the side of comfort, apathy, despair, acquiescence, instead of the side of faith, risk, sacrifice, and resistance? And here I approach my main learning this morning. Persons with disabilities affect our theologies as a congregation. I know some shrink from or are put off by the use of the word theology to describe the underpinning of our commitments because of the God language embedded in the Greek theos. But all so-called God language is language of ultimacy. In the words I heard at General Assembly from Nicole Kirk, professor of history at UU Seminary, Meadville Lombard, theologies are not statements of beliefs, but descriptions of processes of transformation and negotiation on behalf of vulnerable lives in an ambiguous world. Our theological convictions are both the starting point and the foundation to which we keep returning throughout our faith lives. If we believe that all persons have inherent worth and dignity, then the bodies they inhabit likewise have inherent worth and dignity. If disabled bodies are an integral part of life, then they are good and an indelible portion of our shared reality. Disabled bodies call us to focus less on what is lost, a usual way of doing things, a metaphor, a carefree, unexamined modality of being in the world, and more on what is possible. The disabled body is a prophetic body. One that calls us to account for a past, and in that sense, an indictment, but also one that bridges us to a future of greater belonging, and in that sense, a promise. And how we speak, the imagery we employ, makes a difference in how we think and in how we behave. The prophetic disabled body allows us to see that even in the signage of the past, they're contained within it an indictment of its own ableism. For while icons purported to indicate where handicapped people could gain entry to a building, often in the back, next to the dumpster, what they in fact were announcing was that the facility itself was a handicap to persons with disabilities. It was the accesses that were handicapped, not the people being instructed to use them. Handicapped access. The prophetic body, if we take the time, and yes, some effort to listen, is one that moves us forward into progress. The Task Force on Ableism of the UU Ministers Association is well aware that change takes effort and planning and first a willingness to listen. And all of those things create anxiety. Even contemplating disability is uncomfortable for many, perhaps because it brings into relief the temporary nature of many of the things our able body take for granted. So the report urges forbearance for one another. We'll make mistakes. We'll say the wrong things. We'll be forced to acknowledge our own imperfection. And yes, it is frustrating that the work of inclusion is never complete, but rather always provisional, never finished, never fully realized. But in the words of the report, with this ongoing work, we challenge one another to consider a difficult question. If we are unwilling to change, if there are things we refuse to give up, does that mean that there is something more important to us than inclusion and care about and for one another? At the beginning of the service this morning, we sang these words to one another. When I am frightened, will you reassure me? When I am thoughtless, will you understand? If you will show me acceptance, then I may learn to give as you do. Then I may learn to give. The power of this community lies in our freedom here to be scared, hurt, mistaken, and yet still to give first priority to our connection to one another. I'll end my remarks by completing the metaphor I began with my choice for the cover image of today's order of service. A completed puzzle requires all the pieces, all shapes and sizes and colors and edges. Let's move ahead of the granted welcoming gestures of tell us what you need, because that attitude puts the burden of inclusion on those already most left out. It can sound like, how can we fit you into our predetermined puzzle? Rather, can we move with thorough communication of our processes, invitations for suggestions, and adaptation based on what we hear, to an approach that attempts to the best of our abilities to let every person know that we're saving a place for you here at UUCMC. If we can commit to doing so, I think we will find that all the pieces fit when we work together. All the pieces fit when we work together.